Good morning. I mean, good afternoon. I mean, good evening. I'm a little out of it right now. My mind is a little sleepy. We've kind of had a real lazy day around here. It's cool and windy and gray, and you know, we've just been kind of sitting around in the living room. I did cook a dinner for us, but you know, not a lot going on today. So I feel kind of lazy and kind of tired. Yeah, it's nice to have those kind of days every now and then, though. I don't have those kind of days very often, but today I did, and so that's where I'm at. We're here for the 7 steps to awakening, and tonight we're going to be starting with, quote, 586. So what I'm going to do is share with you a link which goes to my journal, just in case anybody wants to read along in my journal when I start reading what I wrote as I contemplated the quotes in the 7 Steps to Awakening. But what I'd really like to do before I get started is I'd like to just play it's a tune. It's a tune that Lisa Hansen posted on my Facebook page just a little bit ago. And I was listening to it, and it, you know, it just blew my heart wide open, and so I would like to share it with you. I'm not sure of the name of it or of the artist. Somebody else may know. We'll find out. But I like it. So from my Facebook page, here's a tune.
Jira Madhava Jekunja Vihari Jira Madhava
Jira Madhava, Jira Madhava,
Okay, so I see people feel it's Deva, Primal, or someone else says maybe Tarantula. I don't know what it is, but it's beautiful. And if you want to later, go to my Facebook page and play it, because it has beautiful, beautiful images of Ramana Ashram. So, as I mentioned, I'm going to start with quote 586. I posted the link, I was going to post it again, but Lynn's on the job. Thank you very much, Lynn. So let me read first 586 from Seven Steps to Awakening. This is Srinivasagadatta Maharaj. Don't ask the mind to confirm what is beyond the mind. Direct experience is the only valid confirmation. This morning, if you all heard me sharing in the Awakening Together weekly gathering, you heard me talking about consciousness as it seems to be defined by humans, which is subject-object consciousness. And then you heard me, I don't know what you would call it, point towards, I guess, consciousness that is not subject-object consciousness. And I talked about how consciousness that is subject-object consciousness, that is the consciousness that A Course in Miracles refers to as the domain of the ego. And I also talked about how with the mind we can't imagine consciousness that isn't subject-object consciousness. That the best that the mind can do is imagine, you know, true perception or the real world, you know, where there's this happy, peaceful person, you know, in love with everything. But we can't imagine beyond subject-object consciousness into this other consciousness, which is our true consciousness and which is actually the light of subject-object consciousness. But we just can't imagine it with the mind because the mind is limited to this subject-object. Well, listen to what Nisargadatta Maharaj is saying now. Don't ask the mind to confirm what is beyond the mind. Direct experience is the only valid confirmation. So if there's anything in us that wants to know what capital C consciousness is, then we have to, in whatever way that we feel guided, move in that direction. I talked this morning about, how subject-object consciousness or human consciousness is like the light of the moon. And I see your hand, Barb, so I'll turn the mic over in a moment. And since the moon doesn't actually have a light, that means in a way it's illusory, but it's reflected light. And if we follow the light of the moon back to the moon, then we see that it doesn't have light, and then we turn and look and we see where the source is and we can follow it back to the source. Oh, I see. You don't really want to speak. Okay. Well, that again is what Nisargadatta Maharaj is saying. Nisargadatta Maharaj is saying the only way to know the light of consciousness, capital C consciousness, is to follow that path back to capital C consciousness. And anybody who knows anything about Nisargadatta Maharaj knows that his experience was that he met a guru who he calls his guru, but actually he spent very little time with him. He met a guru that he calls his guru, and he says that his guru told him to just focus on the I Am presence. And he says he trusted his guru. And that's what he did in all of his free time. He still worked because he had a family to support. But in all of his free time, he sat in what we might call awareness, watching awareness, focusing on the I Am presence. And he says in 3 years' time, he awoke to it, to the consciousness beyond human consciousness. And so what he really seems to be pointing to in this quote is that we now trust that same recommendation. You know, if we really have the call to discover, that we trust the recommendation in the way that he trusted the recommendation so that we can find out for ourselves what true consciousness is. You okay, Jamie? Oh, she's not okay. I don't know. Come here, Jamie. Stay right here. Hold on one moment. Hey, my love. You okay? No, no, don't go near it. No, no, no. Oh, shoot. She just put it in her mouth and ran. Okay. I don't know what it is. Jamie, put it down. Put it down, my love. Tell you what, why don't you go outside with it? Come here, come here, come here. Come here. If you're going to mess with it, come outside. Come here. Come on, you got to go outside with it. All right, my dog just brought in an alien. We don't know what it was, but now it's outside again. Whatever it was, it's outside. Which is, it definitely doesn't belong in the house. So So again, Nisargadatta Maharaj, don't ask the mind to confirm what is beyond the mind. Direct experience is the only valid confirmation. So let's look and see what I wrote after contemplating that a couple of years ago. Number 586 in my journal says, doubts arise. When doubts arise, the seeker may seek evidence that the truth is true and can be reached or realized. The seeker may seek out enlightened people in order to determine if enlightenment is real or not. The seeker may seek out stories of awakening and descriptions of enlightened experience. The seeker may look at accounts of enlightenment with a critical eye to determine if this is enlightenment or not. There may be a conscious or unconscious purpose of determining if enlightenment is indeed possible or if enlightenment is a farce. All of this outer seeking with the intention of verifying enlightenment or understanding enlightenment is a waste of time. It distracts from the practice that leads one to the direct experience of enlightenment. Do not waste time. Stay focused on the practices given by inner guidance during times of inward focus on awakening. Again, do not waste time. Stay focused on the practices given by inner guidance during times of inward focus on awakening. And one thing that's sweet about that is because you know, we can be in different phases of the awakening process, or we can have different paths to awakening. So this particular journal entry didn't say, you know, do X. It said follow what inner guidance gives you to do. You know, follow that practice when you are deep in your heart, away from the personality. Away from the personality's preferences and beliefs, deep in the heart, and inner guidance gives a practice. Follow that practice. Trust that is your path. Trust your inner guidance in the same way that Nisargadatta Maharaj trusted his guru. Again, the end of 586 in the journal says, do not waste time. Stay focused on the practices given by inner guidance during times of inward focus on awakening. And that's really pretty clear, so there's not much to say about it. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to number 587. Again, this is back to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, with Nisargadatta Maharaj. 587 says, without self-realization, no virtue is genuine. Without self-realization, no virtue is genuine. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of something I read to you last week during the members' meeting from Jan Fraser's When Fear Falls Away. And I don't have that book right here where I can grab it. I think after the member meeting, I put it back on the bookshelf. But she said something about after her awakening experience, she realized that even a, I don't know if she used the word good, but I do remember she used the word a self-aware, even kind of a good, well-meaning, self-aware person like she was, right? She says even in that, a good, well-meaning, self-aware person as she was, even in that, ego is active, and in some ways she even indicated in, like causing trouble. Those aren't her exact words, but that was the idea. Even in a good, well-meaning, self-aware person. Ego is alive and causing mischief. She might even have said mischief. I don't remember. Always stirring the pot, Kathy says. Yeah, and that's exactly what I read Nisargadatta Maharaj saying here. Without self-realization, no virtue is genuine. You know, and sometimes when people hear these teachings, by the way, I have to stop and comment on this because I will receive comments from people on the side. So I sometimes know how people hear the teachings. And sometimes when people hear the teachings, they hear the teachings through the filter of guilt or through the filter of what I call the I am bad thought. And so, if we have a teaching like we did a moment ago that says do not waste time, you know, practice whatever inner guidance is giving you, they feel guilty because they feel that they aren't practicing to the best of their ability, and there's a sense of guilt about that. Or if we have a quote like we have here right now that says, without self-realization, no virtue is genuine, again, they feel guilty. These teachings have nothing to do with guilt. When we feel guilty as we listen to these teachings, if we feel not good enough as we listen to these teachings, all that's happening is the teaching itself is literally being distorted through the belief that we have in our own mind that says I'm bad. And it's really helpful if you realize that if you hear a teaching and feel guilt, if you hear a teaching and self-judge, that that is a distortion of the teaching. Because then you can look at that and you can realize there's still something in you, this belief I'm bad, there's still something in you that needs to be let go, rather than throwing away the teaching and saying that the teaching is no good. Because I assure you, these teachings are perfect. And there is no judgment in them. They're simply perfectly good advice from those who know. You know, for example, if you were here in Pueblo West with me at my house and you said, Regina, I'd like to go to this Mexican restaurant. I heard of this Mexican restaurant called Rojas and I'd like to go there. And so I gave you some instructions. And then you went and at some point you called me and you said, I can't find it. And I said, well, where are you? And you told me, and I said, oh, you took a left at such and such a street. You needed to take a right. You see, that's just a good instruction. It's just a good instruction. It may appear to be a correction, but it's just a good instruction to get you to your goal. And that's what these teachings are. There's no judgment in them. They are merely good instructions. And so if we can let go of any sense of guilt we have, let go of any I am bad belief, and just listen to the teaching without the distortion, then we can trust it like Nisargadatta did, and we can practice it in a pure way like Nisargadatta did, and we can experience the benefits of that practice. So again, without any judgment at all, Nisargadatta is telling us, without self-realization, no virtue is genuine. But he's not telling us that we're bad. And if that's what we hear, that's our own filter that still needs purification. All right, so I'm going to go to my journal and see what I wrote. Number 587 in my journal says, good works and charitable acts may indeed appear useful, but nothing is truly useful beyond one's efforts to realize self. Do not let good works become a distraction. I'm being silent for a moment because there's so much that I could say about that. I'm not even sure which direction to go in, so I'm waiting for my clear instruction. I guess the clear instruction is that although this is talking about good works, because of course it's referring to the quote by Nisargadatta Maharaj, the truth is the purest way to understand this journal entry is even beyond good works. Life itself can be a distraction. Just life itself. You know, I can call it subject-object consciousness. You know, now that we've had this morning's teaching, subject-object consciousness itself can be a distraction. And so what we really want to do is we want to learn to be in the world, but not of the world. One thing that happened for me today after the teaching this morning is that a contemplation of the teaching continued. And so one of the things that I remember coming up during the day today was something that's been said many times by Ramana Maharshi when people kind of argue or doubt that consciousness without subject-object consciousness is possible in the world, when they doubt that idea. And they say, well, what about, you know, I have to work to care for my family or whatever. You know, often Ramana Maharshi would say to them, the body will do what the body is to do. And this morning I spoke to you about ants. And about how ants are busy. I mean, they appear busy. They're doing what they are to do, right? Ramana Maharshi says we can trust this body to do the same thing. Whatever role this body is to play, it will. It doesn't need us. And if we're ready to accept that, then what that means is, while the body is doing whatever the body is doing, we can be focused on awareness or focused on the practice that the inner guide has given us during our quiet time of while we were focused on awakening. We can be fully focused on practice because the body will do what the body is to do. So life itself can be a distraction when we're focused outward on the life. You know, certainly good works and charitable acts can be a distraction when we're focused out on those good works and charitable acts. But it's really the subject-object awareness that's a distraction. And if we turn away from the subject-object just to the awareness, The busyness can go on, just like the busyness of the ants go on. And if this body is to do good works and charitable acts, this body will do those good works and charitable acts. But I don't need to be distracted by that. My only responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. So again, Nisargadatta Maharaj said, without self-realization, no virtue is genuine. And then Regina Don Akers wrote, good works and charitable acts may indeed appear useful, but nothing is truly useful beyond one's efforts to realize self. Do not let good works become a distraction. And even more than that, do not let the subject-object life become a distraction. So I'm going to move on to 588. Let's see, Roy has written from Proverbs 30, 24, and 25. They are instinctively wise. The ants are not strong creatures, yet they prepare their food in the summer. All right, 588 from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, by looking tirelessly, I became quite empty, and with that emptiness, all came back to me except the mind. Remember a moment ago I told you the story of Nisargadatta Maharaj, and here's what he's doing right now. He's really referring to his own story. He's referring to the fact that, you know, when his guru told him to focus on the I Am presence to the exclusion of everything else, he trusted his guru and he did that. And he says about that, by looking tirelessly, I became quite empty, and with that emptiness, all came back to me except the mind. You know, the mind itself would grow tired of this experience. There's no doubt about that. This experience of always watching awareness, the mind itself would grow tired of that. It wants the subject, object, consciousness, because it's only in the subject, object, consciousness that it appears to exist. So it seems to me that if we are going to practice tirelessly by looking away from subject object, looking directly at the awareness, we have to already have the ability to not listen to the ego as if it is me. Because when the ego begins to speak and say, oh my God, this is boring, I've got so much other stuff to do. You know, if we think that the ego is us, we're going to say, yep, and get up and go on and get back into the subject-object consciousness. So we have to know the difference between what we are and what the ego is already to some degree. I'm reminded of the teachings of Inner Ramana. In the teachings of Inner Ramana, we were given a bridge identity. Because Inner Ramana, you know, certainly wasn't going to coach us to be identified with the ego, to be identified with the mind. That's not at all helpful. And yet, you know, we may not be ready or be able to be identified with the true self. So Inner Ramana, in order to be helpful, gave us a bridge identity. And that bridge identity was to be identified with our willingness. Or another way of saying that, be identified with our true desire. Or identified with our spiritual aspiration. Or be identified with our heart. So if we spend time, I'm going to call it in some type of worship. Some type of worship, you know, whether that worship is meditation, contemplation, listening to spiritual music, you know, whatever that is, spend time in worship, getting in touch with the heart, getting in touch with the true desire, listening to it and knowing it and identifying with it. Well, of course, it's the one that guides us into the spiritual practices, right? It's the one that guides us, for example, if it's our calling to do awareness, watching awareness practice. And identify with it so that we're saying, this is what I want to do. This is my calling. This is my heart. This is my devotion. This is my love. And then when the mind shows up and says, oh God, this is boring. Let's go do something. that can be dismissed, because I know so certainly that this is my calling. This is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. And then we can practice tirelessly, like Nisargadatta Maharaj did. But we have to be clear on what we want. We have to know the difference between our true desire and all that stuff the ego says we want. All that stuff the ego says we want to do with our time. Nisargadatta Maharaj says, "By looking tirelessly, I became quite empty. And with that emptiness, all came back to me except the mind." This also reminds me of NTI. NTI 1 Corinthians asks us to become the empty shell. And when it's asking us to become the empty shell, it asks us to let go of everything. Everything except trust. And I remember when I was writing NTI, you know, it's funny because a lot of NTI at the time that I was writing it was actually difficult to write down. And the reason it was difficult to write down is because I didn't believe it. I had beliefs that were different than what I was writing. And I had a belief then that, for example, A Course in Miracles was true. Or the messages that the Holy Spirit had given me previously were true. And because they were true, they should be held on to. And so when I wrote, because, you know, it was coming through me, when I wrote NTI 1 Corinthians and it says, "Let go of everything," it said something about let go of, you know, even what I have told you, you know, I being the Holy Spirit. And that was very difficult for me to write down because I had a belief that I needed to remember everything Holy Spirit told me or remember everything I learned in A Course in Miracles. But what it really says is let go of everything except trust. And you know why we need the trust? Because if we are really, really, really becoming empty, the ego can arise with a panic. The ego can encourage us to reach back again for subject-object consciousness. I don't think Dances is here right now, but not too long ago, Dances told us a story about how this happened to her, about how she was just about to merge into the oneness, and I forget exactly how she said it, but, you know, this thought came in, you know, this thought, I don't remember what the thought was, I wish I did, but basically it was a thought that was reaching back out towards the world, back out towards subject-object consciousness, and she bought into that thought and followed it. And she shared with us very openly, you know, recognizing what had happened, and was very happy to share that with us so that we could all learn from it with her. We have to be willing to be completely empty, holding on to nothing but trust. Just trust. And I saw Kathy's question, what about true desire? I would say true desire brought us to this point, but at this point we want to be empty of everything except trust. And the reason I say that is because that's what the guidance says, and I'm going to trust it. So I'm not going to add anything to it. And then NTI says, if we do this, if we let go of everything except trust and we become completely empty, then we will be filled again. Then we will be filled again. Well, isn't this what Nisargadatta Maharaj is saying? Listen to him. He says, "By looking tirelessly, I became quite empty. And with that emptiness, all came back to me except the mind." Right? Filled again. but this time no ego. I think Jesus called that being born again. So let's go look and see what I wrote in the journal. This guidance keeps coming to me now. The guidance I thought would never come, and yet it has arrived. It is time to put more effort into no thinking by learning the awareness, watching awareness method of meditation. Emptiness comes from emptiness. By watching emptiness instead of objects, I shall know myself as bliss emptiness. I wrote this a little over 2 years ago, September 4th, 2012. And I did not answer the call. I did not start practicing awareness, watching awareness meditation. And in the last week, I have very clearly been feeling the call again. And I know that beyond any shadow of a doubt. And so it's rather funny, since I've been feeling that call again now, that by coincidence, as we call it, I should come across this journal entry. So the question really becomes, am I going to let the invitation pass me by again? Or will I embrace it this time? This guidance keeps coming to me now. The guidance I thought would never come, and yet it has arrived. It is time to put more effort into no thinking by learning the awareness, watching awareness method of meditation. Emptiness comes from emptiness. By watching emptiness instead of objects, I shall know myself as bliss emptiness. And again, I do know that this is my call. I do know that this is the guidance I've been receiving since, what was it, Tuesday, when I read that article about the animal mind. And I contemplated it in the way I shared with you this morning. Do you remember how I ended this morning's teaching? Tell you what, let me share again, if I can find the page. I had a bookmark this morning, so it was easy to find the page. Now I don't have a bookmark. But one moment, I can get the page number. I know where I have it written down. Page 157, I'm reading from one of Michael Langford's books. Of course, you know, Seven Steps to Awakening is one of Michael Langford's books. And right now I'm reading from another one, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, page 157. I read this morning, but I'm going to read it again. Plus, I'm going to read the example that comes after this one. A question might arise. Why does the awareness, watching awareness method focus attention on one's ordinary, everyday background of awareness instead of attempting to look for infinite awareness? Here is an example that can answer this question. Imagine that you live in a mansion that has thousands of dark rooms, and you are trying to find the sunlight. If you focus your attention on a beam of sunlight that enters one of the rooms and follow that beam and trace its origin, you can find the source of that light, the sun. However, if you hold the concept of the sun and ignore the beam of sunlight that enters some of the rooms, you could open 1,000 doors in dark rooms and never find the sun. In this example, the sun represents the infinite awareness, which is the true self. The beam of sunlight represents your ordinary, everyday consciousness. If people hold some concept of infinite awareness and try to find it, they will never find it. Your own everyday background of awareness is the path to infinite awareness, as sunlight is to the sun. And, of course, I didn't remember my exact words, but after reading that this morning, I said something about, you know, let's follow the only path we have. Let's follow the only path we have, the path of the awareness that we are aware of, back to awareness or consciousness that is prior to subject-object consciousness. Let me read the next example in Michael's book. Another example. Imagine a planet where all the people were born and raised and spent their entire lives in a movie theater. Almost all of them believed the movie they were seeing on the screen was real. Their attention was so fixed on the screen that they never bothered to turn their heads around 180 degrees to see the projector's light. One of them had the courage to turn his head around 180 degrees, and he saw the projector's light. He did not know what it was, but he followed that light until he found the projector. He went back and told the people that what they were seeing on the screen was not real. He told them that to find the projector, they would have to turn their heads around 180 degrees. Due to the long habit of always keeping their attention fixed on the movie screen, due to fear of the unknown, due to their belief that the movie was real, and due to their disbelief in what he was telling them, very few bothered to turn their heads around 180 degrees to see the light from the projector. I'm going to read that again. He told them that to find the projector, they would have to turn their heads around 180 degrees. Due to the long habit of always keeping their attention fixed on the movie screen, due to the fear of the unknown, due to their belief that the movie was real, and due to their disbelief in what he was telling them, very few bothered to turn their heads around 180 degrees to see the light from the projector. Some of those who did follow his instructions turned their heads immediately back to the screen. They were used to the illusion and afraid of the truth. Others did not sustain their attempt to find the projector long enough to find it. After all, it is difficult to find the projector in the dark. One has to pass through a number of doors to find it. Once in a while, someone actually persevered long enough to find the projector. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of in the Bible as well. Do you remember Jesus talking about the path? Let's see. The path where some of the seeds landed on the path. Some of the seeds landed among the thorns. Some of the seeds landed, some landed on the path, some landed, and there on the path they couldn't really get planted well. Some landed among the thorns, I think some landed among rocky soil, and then some landed on good soil. Do you remember that? Let me see if I can find that quickly. Roy, if you know the scripture, you can put it in for me. You seem to put in scriptures a lot. Let's see, I'm going to guess that that probably comes up in Luke. I don't know if I'll be able to find it, but I'm going to look. I think I'm probably not going to be able... Yeah, here it is, Luke 8. I found it. This is what I was about to say. I'm not going to find it. I found it. All right, so now let me, now that I found it, let me get to another place where I can read it. Okay, here we go. It's called the Parable of the Sower. Yeah, Jay says it also is in Mark 4. So here it is from Luke. After this, Jesus traveled about from one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had come out. Joanna, the wife of Chuza, the manager of Herod's household. Susanna, and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. While a large crowd was gathering and people were coming to Jesus from town after town, he told this parable. A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path. It was trampled on, and the birds ate it up. Some fell on rocky ground, and when it came up, the plants withered because they had no moisture. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up with it and choked the plants. Still, other seed fell on good soil. It came up and yielded a crop, 100 times more than was sown. When he said this, he called out, "Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear." Listen to this again from Michael Langford's book. He told them that to find the projector, they would have to turn their heads around 180 degrees. Due to the long habit of always keeping their attention fixed on the movie screen, due to fear of the unknown, due to their belief that the movie was real, and due to their disbelief in what he was telling them, very few bothered to turn their heads around 180 degrees. To see the light from the projector. Some of those who did follow his instructions turned their heads immediately back to the screen. Let's see, Jesus says, as he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path. It was trampled on, and the birds ate it up. Some of those who did follow his instructions turned their heads immediately back to the screen. They were used to the illusion and afraid of the truth. Others did not sustain their attempt to find the projector long enough to find it. Jesus says some fell on rocky ground, and when it came up, the plants withered because they had no moisture. Others did not sustain their attempt to find the projector long enough to find it. After all, it is difficult to find the projector in the dark. One has to pass through a number of doors to find it. Once in a while, someone actually persevered long enough to find the projector. Jesus says, still other seed fell on good soil. It came up and yielded a crop 100 times more than was sown. So again, Nisargadatta Maharaj is saying, by looking tirelessly, I became quite empty, and with that emptiness, all came back to me except the mind. And the journal, the RDA journal, says, "The guidance keeps coming to me now. The guidance I thought would never come, and yet it has arrived. It is time to put more effort into no thinking. By learning the awareness, watching awareness method of meditation. Emptiness comes from emptiness. By watching emptiness instead of objects, I shall know myself as bliss, emptiness." All right, I'm going to go on to number 589 now. Five eighty-nine in the Seven Steps to Awakening, Nisargadatta Maharaj says, "Beyond the mind, all distinctions cease. Beyond the mind, all distinctions cease." All right, here's what Regina wrote in the journal, September 6, 2012. Thought separates. Thought defines and separates. Thought says, this is this, and that is that. Thought defines me as me, and you as you. All of this distinction and separation lies in thought. Without thought, there is no distinction, and there is no separation. Do not be afraid of the practice or state of no thought. Without distinction or separation, what could there be to fear? Without distinction or separation, who could there be to fear it? That reminds me again of this morning when I was talking about the subject-object consciousness. I mentioned that in the subject-object consciousness, there is a me and there is a you who can hurt me, a you who can offend me, right? And there are circumstances that can hurt me. But without subject-object consciousness, that doesn't exist. Therefore, there cannot be hurt. Some of you know I once had the experience of being an apple. And those of you who don't know that, if you would like to hear about the experience, you can just go to my website, reginadonacres.com, click on video, and you'll see right there underneath the video list, I was an apple. And just click on that, because I'm not going to retell the story now. But a week or so ago, I was on Jennifer Hadley's program, Living a Course in Miracles. And she asked me a question. I had just told the apple story. And she asked me a question. The question was, you know, some people say that, you know, God is not aware of the illusion. You know, what do you have to say about that? And I said, well, you know, when I was the apple, if I had been sitting on a table in an apartment where a man was beating a woman, I wouldn't have known it. I would have only seen light interacting with light. You see, without subject-object consciousness, there's nothing to harm anything. There can't be hurt. There can't be victim. There can't be victimizer. You need subject-object for all of those things. As Nisargadatta says, beyond the mind, all distinctions cease. And where there are no distinctions, there can be no suffering. It's impossible. Therefore, there is only bliss. Let me just read what I wrote in the journal one more time, and then we'll end. Thought separates. Thought defines and separates. Thought says, this is this and that is that. Thought defines me as me and you as you. All of this distinction and separation lies in thought. Without thought, there is no distinction and there is no separation. Do not be afraid of the practice or state of no thought. Without distinction or separation, what could there be to fear? Without distinction or separation, who could there be to fear it? And with that said, I'm complete for today. Have a great evening. I will be back at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for our daily quote contemplation. Bye.